Pop Merrill died leaning back in the chair behind his work table, where he had spent so many hours sitting. Sitting and smoking. Sitting and fixing things up so they would run for at least a while, and he could sell the worthless to the thoughtless. Sitting and loaning money to the impulsive and the improvident after the sun went down. He died staring up at the ceiling, from which his own blood dripped back down to splatter on his cheeks and into his open eyes. His chair overbalanced and spilled his lolling body onto the floor. His purse and his key ring clattered. On the desk, the final Polaroid continued to jiggle about restlessly, its sides spread apart, and Kevin seemed to sense some unknown thing, both alive and not alive, groaning in horrid, unknowable labor pains. "We've got to get out of here," his father panted, pulling at him. John Delavan's eyes were large and frenzied, riveted on that spreading, moving photograph which now covered half of Merrill's work table. It no longer resembled a photograph at all. Its sides bulged out like the cheeks of someone trying frantically to whistle. The shiny bubble, now a foot high, humped and shuddered. Strange, unnameable colors raced aimlessly back and forth across the surface, which seemed to have broken some oily sort of sweat. That roar, full of frustration and purpose and frantic hunger, ripped through his brain again and again, threatening to split it and let in madness. Kevin pulled away from him, ripping his shirt along the shoulder. His voice was full of a deep, strange calm. "No, it would just come after us. I think it wants me. Because if it wanted Pop, it's already got him. And I was the one who owned the camera first anyway. But it wouldn't stop there. It'd take you, too. And it might not stop there either." "You can't do anything!" his father screamed.
"Yes," Kevin said. "I've got one chance."
And raised the camera. The edges of the picture reached the edges of the work table. Instead of lolling over, they curled up and continued to twist and spread. Now they resembled odd wings, which were somehow equipped with lungs and were trying to breathe in some tortured fashion. The entire surface of the amorphous, pulsing thing continued to puff up. What should have been flat surface had become a horrid tumor. Its lumped and cratered sides trickled with vile liquid. It gave off the bland smell of head cheese. The dog's roars had become continuous, the trapped and furious belling of a hellhound bent on escape, and some of the late Pop Merrill's clocks began to strike again and again as if in protest. Mr. Delavan's frantic urge to escape had deserted him. He felt overcome by a deep and dangerous lassitude, a kind of lethal sleepiness. Kevin held the camera's viewfinder to his eye. He had only been deer hunting a few times, but he remembered how it was when it was your turn to wait, hidden, with your rifle as your hunting partners walked through the woods toward you, deliberately making as much noise as they could, hoping to drive something out of the trees and into the clearing where you were waiting, your field of fire a safe angle that would cross in front of the men. You didn't have to worry about hitting them. You only had to worry about hitting the deer. There was time to wonder if you could hit it, when and if it showed itself. There was also time to wonder if you could bring yourself to fire at all, time to hope that the deer would remain hypothetical so the test did not have to be made. And so it had always turned out to be. The one time there had been a deer, his father's friend Bill Roberson had been lying up in the blind. Mr. Roberson had put the bullet just where you were supposed to put it, at the juncture of neck and shoulder. And they had gotten the game warden to take their pictures around it, a 12-point buck any man would be happy to brag on. "Bet you wish it'd been your turn in the puckies, don't you, son?" the game warden had asked, ruffling Kevin's hair. He had been 12 then, the growth spurt which had begun about 17 months ago, and which had so far taken him to just an inch under 6 feet, still a year away, which meant he had not been big enough to be resentful of a man who wanted to ruffle his hair. Kevin had nodded, keeping his secret to himself. He was glad it hadn't been his turn in the puckies. His, the rifle which must be responsible for throwing the slug or not throwing it, and, if he had turned out to have the courage to do the shooting, his reward would have been only another troublesome responsibility, to shoot the buck clean. He didn't know if he could have mustered the courage to put another bullet in the thing if the kill wasn't clean, or the strength to chase the trail of its blood and steaming, startled droppings, and finish what he had started if it ran. He had smiled up at the game warden and nodded, and his dad had snapped a picture of that, and there had never been any need to tell his dad that the thought going on behind that upturned brow and under the game warden's ruffling hand had been, "No, I don't wish it. The world is full of tests, but 12's too young to go hunting them. I'm glad it was Mr. Roberson. I'm not ready yet to try a man's tests." But now, he was the one in the blind, wasn't he? And the animal was coming, wasn't it? And it was no harmless eater of grasses this time, was it? This was a killing engine big enough and mean enough to swallow a tiger whole, and it meant to kill him. And that was only for starters, and he was the only one that could stop it. The thought of turning the Polaroid over to his father crossed his mind, but only momentarily. Something deep inside himself knew the truth. To pass the camera would be tantamount to murdering his father and committing suicide himself. His father believed something, but that wasn't specific enough. The camera wouldn't work for his father, even if his father managed to break out of his current stunned condition and press the shutter. It would only work for him. So he waited on the test, peering through the viewfinder of the camera as if it were the gun sight of a rifle, peering at the photograph as it continued to spread and force that shiny, liquescent bubble wider and wider and higher and higher. Then the actual birthing of the sundog into this world began to happen. The camera seemed to gain weight and turn to lead as the thing roared again with a sound like a whiplash loaded with steel shot. The camera trembled in his hands, and he could feel his wet, slippery fingers simply wanting to uncurl and let go. He held on, his lips pulling back from his teeth in a sick and desperate grin. Sweat ran into one eye, momentarily doubling his vision. He threw his head back, snapping his hair off his forehead and out of his eyebrows, and then nestling his staring eye back into the viewfinder as a great ripping sound, like heavy cloth being torn in half by strong, slow hands, filled the Emporium Galorium. The shiny surface of the bubble tore open. Red smoke, like the blast from a tea kettle set in front of red neon, billowed out. The thing roared again, an angry, homicidal sound. A gigantic jaw, filled with crogged teeth, burst up through the shriveling membrane of the now collapsing bubble, like the jaw of a breaching pilot whale. It ripped and chewed and gnawed at the membrane, which gave way with gummy, splattering sounds. The clocks struck wildly, crazily. His father grabbed him again, so hard that Kevin's teeth rapped against the plastic body of the camera, and it came within a hair of spilling out of his hands and shattering on the floor. "Shoot it!" his father screamed over the thing's bellowing din. "Shoot it, Kevin! If you can, shoot it! Shoot it now! Christ Jesus, it's going to..." Kevin yanked away from his father's hand. "Not yet," he said. "Not just yet." The thing screamed at the sound of Kevin's voice. The sundog lunged up from wherever it was, driving the picture still wider. It gave and stretched with a groaning sound. This was replaced by the thick cough of ripping fabric again. And suddenly the sundog was up, its head rising black and rough and tangled through the hole in reality like some weird periscope, which was all tangled metal and glittering, glaring lenses. Except it wasn't metal, but that twisted, spiky fur Kevin was looking at, and those were not lenses, but the thing's insane, raging eyes. It caught at the neck, the spines of its pelt shredding the edges of the hole it had made into a strange sunburst pattern. It roared again, and sickly, yellow-red fire licked out of its mouth. John Delavan took a step backward and struck a table overloaded with thick copies of Weird Tales and Fantastic Universe. The table tilted, and Mr. Delavan flailed helplessly against it, his heels first rocking back and then shooting out from under him. Man and table went over with a crash. The sundog roared again, then dipped its head with an unsuspected delicacy and tore at the membrane which held it. The membrane ripped. The thing barked out a thin stream of fire which ignited the membrane and turned it to ash. The beast lunged upward again, and Kevin saw that the thing on the tie around its neck was no longer a tie clasp, but the spoon-shaped tool which Pop Merrill had used to clean his pipe. In that moment, a clean calmness fell over the boy. His father bellowed in surprise and fear as he tried to untangle himself from the table he had fallen over, but Kevin took no notice. The cry seemed to come from a great distance away. "It's all right, Dad," he thought. fixing the struggling, emerging beast more firmly in the viewfinder. It's all right. Don't you see? It can be all right, anyway, because the charm it wears has changed. He thought that perhaps the sundog had its master, too, and its master had realized that Kevin was no longer sure prey. And perhaps there was a dog catcher in that strange nowhere town of Polaroidsville. There must be, else why had the fat woman been in his dream? It was the fat woman who had told him what he must do, either on her own or because that dog catcher had put her there for him to see and notice. The two-dimensional fat woman with her two-dimensional shopping cart full of two-dimensional cameras.
Be careful, boy. Pop's dog broke his leash and he's a mean un. It's hard to take his picture, but you can't do it at all unless you have a camera.
And now he had his camera, didn't he? It was not sure, not by any means, but at least he had it. The dog paused, head turning almost aimlessly, until its muddy, burning gaze settled on Kevin Delavan. Its black lips peeled back from its corkscrewed boar's fangs. Its muzzle opened to reveal the smoking channel of its throat, and it gave a high, thrilling howl of fury. The ancient hanging globes that lit Pop's place at night shattered one after another and rose, sending down spinning shards of frosted, fly-be-shitted glass. It lunged, its broad, panting chest bursting through the membrane between the worlds. Kevin's fingers settled on the Polaroid's trigger. It lunged again, and now its front legs popped free, and those cruel spurs of bone, so like gigantic thorns, scraped and scrabbled for purchase on the desk. They dug long vertical scars in the heavy rock maple. Kevin could hear the dusky thud and scratch of its pistoning rear legs, digging for a grip down there, wherever down there was. And he knew that this was the final short stretch of seconds in which it would be trapped and at his mercy. The next convulsive lunge would send it flying over the desk, and once free of the hole through which it was squirming, it would move as fast as liquid death, charging across the space between them, setting his pants ablaze with its fiery breath, split seconds before it tore into his warm innards. Very clearly, Kevin instructed, "Say cheese, you motherfucker," and triggered the Polaroid.